Sec Unit Enrichment. A The Murderbot Diaries fanfic. Written by Blender Full of Sarcasm. Read by Black Glass as the narrator and Murderbot.
Wilfriede 0815 as Art.
Borchetta as Scooby-Doo.
15 as Daphne.
Devil with a Bird Dress as Velma.
Tipsy Kitty as Fred.
And
Jatania as Shaggy.
The fauna was talking to me. I pinged Art. It was pretending to be a bot pilot, so it wasn't hovering over me in the feed like it wanted to. I said, "Is that fauna talking to me?" Art, like a pedantic asshole, said,
"He is not talking to you. He is talking to his humans."
That wasn't what I meant, and Art knew it. The fauna was accompanied by four pale humans of varying genders, wearing brightly colored clothing that wasn't work clothing. Their entries in the social feed listed their job descriptions as meddling kids. I hadn't heard of that job before, but the description seemed accurate. The fauna did not have an entry in the social feed, but he did have a tag hanging from the collar around his neck that said he/him on one side and SD on the other. I didn't know if that was his name, though. The feed felt weirdly muffled here, and I didn't like it.
"Roo-rah-roo,"
asked the fauna, and this time he was actually talking to me specifically. I didn't like that either. It took me 0.0216 seconds to process that it was a request for personal identifying information, and not the name of a dish Pin Lee complained about whenever she had to go to one of the fancy lawyer parties in the corporate rim to schmooze. Apparently all of them always had the same ones, no matter what planet or station the event was on, and Pinley refused to eat any of them. Or maybe she couldn't? Pinley has a lot of dietary restrictions, and they change at random intervals. I have a chart for it and everything. "I'm station security," I told the fauna, which wasn't technically a lie. Station sexists thought I was a part of it, since I tacked it as soon as I disembarked from ART. Mostly I did that, so alarms would stop going off whenever the sensors detected the energy weapons in my arms. Corporations don't like it when rogue murder bots are allowed to walk around their stations. It was also convenient for things like this, though. There was a report of a disturbance in the zone. That was also true. Sexus had pinged me to investigate the disturbance, which was one of the drawbacks of making it think I was supposed to be there. I had been bored enough to check it out while my media finished downloading. This media station had hundreds of hours of media that I hadn't heard of before, and also Med Station Argala, because of course it did. And I could only download so much at once, even when I was bypassing the choke station feed. And Art still had to finish unloading its cargo module, so I had some time to kill. The report had come from a zone that was within Art's comm range, so it could tell me if any humans were stupid enough to try boarding it while I was gone. It could handle them itself, but it was pretending to be a bot pilot, like it did whenever it went on cargo runs, / intel gathering missions for the Pan-System University of Mahira in New Tideland, and their secret planetary liberation department. And I think it liked watching me get rid of raiders, / Port Authority officials.
"Oh, are you talking about the ghost?"
the human with bright orange hair asked. The feed display said her name was Daphne, she, her. I didn't know why she had put her pronouns in the name field and left the gender field blank, like we were living in the era before the social feed existed. But whatever, it wasn't my business.
"I don't know that it's a ghost,"
said the shortest human, Velma, pointing at the ground. She had brown hair and thick glass rectangles over her eyes instead of visual augments. That was weird, but maybe she couldn't afford them. I didn't know how much augments cost, but they were probably overpriced and shitty. Everything made in the corporate room was overpriced and shitty, including me.
"Ghosts don't leave footprints."
The disturbance was actually that something weird was going on with the station cameras, and Sexus was having trouble connecting to them, but I didn't tell them that. It seemed like the kind of thing that would make humans anxious, and I was already anxious enough for all of us. Instead, I sent one of the new drones I was testing for Arden to get a better look at the marks on the floor. It was less than half the size of my normal Intel drones, and also more agile. They were definitely footprints, but they weren't brown like most of the various types of earth humans dragged in on their clothes and shoes. The residue looked light and chalky, almost like dried paint.
Ghost, an apparition of a dead person which is believed to appear or become manifest to the living, typically as a nebulous image,
Art told me, like I didn't watch media. Sanctuary Moon had three separate major arcs involving ghosts. There was one where the colony solicitor used a psychic to find a corpse in order to depose the corrupt temporary colony representative. One where the colony sexus had been possessed by the ghost of an angry fauna. And one where the colony solicitor's sister's love interest was being haunted by her dead marital partners. The last one is boring. I've only watched it 3 times.
Well, gang, you know what time it is. Let's split up and look for clues,
said Fred, the pale human with yellow hair and a bright scarf tied around his neck. Do not do that, I said. If there was something on the station that wanted humans to think it was haunted, splitting up and investigating it was a stupid, bad idea. Unless these humans were looking for easy ways to get injured and or dead, then it was a great idea. Why did I even care? It wasn't like these humans were my humans. Fred looked shocked, like he didn't expect anyone to argue with him. Unlike most of the humans I'd interacted with inside the Corporation Rim, he didn't seem offended that I told him he was wrong.
Well, what do you suggest we do?
We need to find out if this is really a ghost,
Daphne agreed.
How can we do that if we don't have any clues?
You have the footprints, I reminded them. Ghosts don't leave footprints.
Not a lot of things leave footprints,
Art mused pointedly. It had probably analyzed the footprints already, and I was sure it had figured out what the ghost was already. But it probably wasn't going to tell me. I knew it thought hauling cargo was boring, even if it was using most of its extra processing power to watch media with me. It missed being a teaching transport, so it liked to exercise its function by creating what it called teachable moments. It was funny when it happened to raiders, but annoying when it happened to me.
Hey, Freddy!
Shaggy, the tallest and thinnest human with scraggly facial hair, did something with his throat that made an audible sound and looked painful.
I think I found a clue.
What is it?
Asked Fred.
Like that?
One of my inputs fizzled out as one of my drones went offline. 2 more shifted to cover the gap it had left, revealing a roughly human-shaped figure that looked weirdly transparent and fuzzy at the edges. Presumably, this was the so-called ghost. Well, that wasn't good. I designated the ghost as Hostile One, and got ready to punch it before it could get close enough to attack the humans behind me. Except then, Fred shouted,
Run!
What? Why? Run where? I wasted 0.02 seconds asking myself stupid questions, which was apparently long enough for the humans and the fauna to start running. I wondered how much practice they'd had at that, because their reaction time was a lot faster than most of the other humans I'd met, even though running away was a stupid decision when they had a sec unit standing right beside them. Not that they knew that, I guess. At least they were running in the opposite direction of whatever had deactivated my drone. My only choices were to follow them, because I hadn't thought to put any trackers on them, or to head back to Art, forget these humans and their domesticated fauna had ever existed, and spend the rest of my download time staring at its bulkhead, because my media downloads were taking up so much of my feed bandwidth that I couldn't even play Sanctuary Moon without slowing everything down by 30-plus hours, and we weren't staying at the station that long. So I ran after them. I guess I could have stayed behind to fight off Hostile One, but I had a sneaking suspicion that these humans were running headfirst into more danger, because that's what humans usually do when they're scared.
Congratulations on your new humans,
Art told me. It was probably being sarcastic. I said, They're not my humans.
They became your humans as soon as you started talking to them and they didn't run away screaming.
Ugh, maybe. I didn't want to think about that, so instead I focused on using my drones to keep an eye on the humans and their fauna ahead of me and Hostile One chasing us. Music started playing through my drone speakers, and I realized that Art had taken it upon itself to take control of the soundtrack to our chase sequence. I recognized the song as one that appeared a lot in Pre-Corporation Rim Media, and also Corporation Rim Media that pretended to take place Pre-Corporation Rim. It was sung by a band with a weird name. Easy something? Easy Fun? I don't remember. And also, I don't care. I asked, why?
It seemed appropriate,
Art said blandly.
It is also distracting for your pursuer.
It was right. As soon as the music started playing, Hostile One started moving more haphazardly. It stumbled, careening back and forth like Rati when he consumes too many age-restricted beverages, and kept slamming into the walls of the various hallways that Fred was leading us down. He kept doubling back and looping around, which I would normally approve of for security purposes, but trying to cover our tracks was kind of moot when the thing chasing us was only a few meters away. For some reason, this also involved Daphne and Fred pulling me behind the counter of a deserted food and beverage store and pretending to take its order, make the food, and then throw it in Hostile One's face as a distraction so we could run away again. I didn't understand why this was necessary. It was faster to just keep running. I guess maybe the humans needed a break from running after a while, but that was still a weird way to manufacture one. I also tried to punch Hostile One before we escaped, but my fist went right through where its face was supposed to be and hit no resistance. I really did not like that. Art sent me the station schematics through our feed connection, which was actually helpful. Between the 12 visual inputs I was juggling, making sure the humans stayed out of reach of Hostile One, and all my downloads, I didn't have enough processing power to spare to look them up myself. This way, I didn't have to drop any of my downloads. The schematic showed a maintenance closet a couple hallways away. I told Station Sexus to unlock it for me, and pushed my way to the front of the group. They followed me without argument when I turned on the next hallway, which was a nice change of pace, and didn't even complain when I sped up to just under standard human running speed. They also didn't complain when I shoved them one by one into the maintenance closet and closed the door behind us, just before Hostile One rounded the corner. I was very aware of the human and fauna breathing sounds coming from behind me, and could only hope that Hostile One couldn't register them. I paused my own respiration and shifted so my torso would block the view of my arm from the humans and the fauna, and readied my energy weapon. If Hostile One tried to open the door, I would be ready. 5.35 seconds later, Art said,
"The ghost has continued down corridor 635 and does not seem to have realized that it is no longer chasing you."
I checked the schematics and determined that corridor 635 was far enough away that we no longer needed to hide in the maintenance closet. I opened the door and stepped out, making a gesture with my hand that I'd seen humans in my media do when they wanted people to follow them. It must have worked, because Fred stepped out after me. Daphne tried to do the same thing, but she tripped over a bucket.
Jeepers!
"That word does not appear anywhere in my databases,"
Art said, sounding intrigued, and accidentally knocked Velma's glass rectangles off her face, while trying to regain her balance.
"Jinkies, my glasses!"
"Sorry, Velms."
"I am pleasantly surprised that you managed to rescue these humans without any grievous bodily harm,"
Art told me, while Velma was feeling along the floor for her glasses. I was, too. I'd even done it without starting to leak anywhere, which is what Amina would call a huge win for me personally. Which I guess it was. I hate it when I leak. The remaining human and the fauna did not seem to want to leave the maintenance closet. They had to be bribed with a treat that Fred called Scooby Snacks. Apparently the X was very important for proprietary reasons. The fauna and Shaggy only liked the off-brand snacks. They claimed Scooby Snacks didn't taste as good. I thought it was weird that Shaggy had opinions on treats that were made for domesticated fauna. But what do I know? I don't need anything. That was also how I learned that the fauna had a name. His name was Scooby. Shaggy informed me that his full name was Scoobert Doo. I didn't know what to do with that information, so I just said, okay. Velma finally found her glasses. Daphne had to change her shoes, because they were covered in the gunk that had been in the bucket. She apparently carried around extra pairs of shoes in her bag that were identical to the one she was wearing. That seemed like a waste of space to me, but my feet are completely inorganic. Once we were back in the embarkation zone, Fred clapped his hands together.
Okay, gang. Time to set a trap.
What do you fucking mean it's time to set a trap? It's time for the humans with squishy organic parts to leave, so the Murderbot can do its job. That's what time it is. It's time for you to get out of here, I said. Where's your transport? I'll escort you there. Daphne laughed.
Don't be silly.
We can't leave until we uncover the truth about this haunting,
Velma agreed. Shaggy tentatively raised one hand into the air.
Like, I wouldn't mind leaving.
Me either.
Scooby nodded frantically in agreement. I didn't know Fauna could move their heads like that. It was weird to watch.
It's a great trap,
Fred insisted. Like how good his plan was going to persuade me that it was a good idea. Shaggy and Scooby were clearly the most intelligent ones here.
I was inspired by the featured traps in last week's Traps Weekly.
Traps Weekly? I asked Art.
A magazine detailing various complicated traps, somewhat similar to a historical or nature publication,
Art informed me.
It is published by the same company as the more explicit publication, Traps Illustrated.
My face did something before I could stop it.
As its name suggests, the magazine is generally published weekly by a small company in the Nibiru system.
Huh. Maybe I needed to start downloading it. The weekly one, I mean. I didn't want to think about whatever was in the other one. Wait. Isn't the Nibiru system the one with all the time fluctuations?
That's why I said the magazine is usually published weekly. Interestingly, occasionally, two issues published at the same time can have minor or even major differences, depending on when they were taken out of the system,
Art said, sounding intrigued. Okay, so maybe I didn't need that in my downloads. Being from the Nibiru system did explain some things about these humans, though. You're going to make your trap anyway, even if I take you back to your ship, aren't you? I said. I'd never met any other humans from the Nibiru system. But media told me that they were not, what I call, concerned with their own safety. They were usually the first ones to die, because they couldn't resist poking the alien remnants. For once, the media was absolutely right. These humans would definitely poke an alien remnant if there was one around. Shaggy or Scooby might even try to eat it, if it looked edible enough. Gross.
Probably,
Velma admitted.
Freddy does like his traps,
Daphne agreed, sounding faintly resigned. I said, fine, let's set the stupid trap. The faster we caught Hostile One, the faster I could get these humans and their pet fauna away from it.
Great,
Fred said, smiling so wide I could see every single one of his teeth.
I have a really good one this time. Listen closely.
It took all of 5 corporate standard minutes for them to find all the necessary components for their trap, which was impressive. It took much longer to set it up.
This seems unnecessarily complicated,
Art said. And that was coming from a bot with enough processing power to completely take over at least 5 transit hubs without anyone noticing. I agreed. I did not know where they had found that many coconuts, and I also did not want to know.
Okay, here's the plan, Fred said. When the ghost comes out of the hallway, it's going to slip on the cleaning fluid we sprayed on the floor. The cleaning fluid is going to bubble up so the ghost can't see the tripwire. When it triggers the tripwire, the wire will snap and the coconuts will fall from the net on the ceiling. The coconuts will roll the ghost towards that net, and then we'll tie it up before it can escape.
Why?
Art asked blankly. That was a good question that I did not have an answer to, so I ignored it, even though I agreed. Why did the trap have so many? There were so many potential fault points, that it was almost certainly going to fail to catch Hostile One.
"Row, rarry, rarret, rarose, ruler, roar,"
Scooby asked.
"Like, it sounds like you're looking for someone to volunteer to be live bait,"
Shaggy agreed, suspicious. He folded his arms over his chest.
"If you think that's gonna be me and Scoob, you've got another thing coming."
Scooby nodded frantically, shuddering violently.
"Would you do it for some Scooby snacks?"
Daphne asked, suddenly holding a brightly colored box that was definitely too big to fit in her bag. Shaggy and Scooby looked like they were considering it. Fuck no. Threat assessment said that was a dumb idea. "I'll do it," I said. Scooby sighed exaggeratedly, probably with relief.
"Oh."
Daphne looked surprised. Then she held the box out towards me and asked tentatively,
"Do you want Scooby snacks?"
Art said,
"Yes, SecUnit. Would you like to consume the treat manufactured for the purposes of rewarding domesticated fauna?"
If it had been human, it would have sounded like it was barely holding back laughter. I did not want to consume the treats intended for domesticated fauna, so I said no, and walked away to go be live bait. 9 corporate standard minutes later, I realized being live bait was boring. It was the same thing as patrolling, except instead of eliminating any threats I came across, I had to make one specific threat chase me. That would have been easy if I could find the stupid not-ghost. It wasn't showing up on any of my sensors, including thermal, which just seemed wrong. And even though I'd sent my 5 remaining drones off to scan the rest of the weirdly empty hallways, they hadn't found anything yet. Then the one I'd left with the humans pinged me to notify me that Shaggy and Scooby had decided that now was a great time to go back to the abandoned food store for some starch-based nutrition. Risk assessment told me there was a 56.39% chance that they would run into Hostile One before I did, which seemed high to me, since I was alone and they weren't. Another point in favor of my stupid risk assessment module being broken. I told the drone that had pinged me to stay with Velma, Daphne, and Fred, then sent the closest drone toward Shaggy and Scooby until I could get there. It found them shoving an improbable amount of food into their mouths. I didn't think it was physically possible for humans to open their mouths that wide. Maybe Shaggy had an augment?
"Like, what are you doing here?"
Shaggy asked, surprised to see me. That was when Hostile One appeared at the end of the corridor. I said, "That's why," then leaped over the counter. This time, I didn't waste any time punching things that I wasn't going to be able to hit. I lifted Shaggy over one shoulder and tucked Scooby under my other arm, and then ran back towards the trap. This time, Hostile One followed after me. I upped my speed to slightly faster than human standard, ignoring the surprised yelps from Shaggy and Scooby, and Hostile One's speed increased proportionally. That was weird. I sped up again, this time going slightly faster than was physically possible for a human. Hostile One did the same. I slowed down to my original speed again. So did it. Hostile One kept exactly 10 centimeters of distance between itself and us the entire time it was chasing us. It was just enough that, even though it had its arms outstretched like it was going to grab me, its spindly fingers never quite touched me. I don't know if Shaggy or Scooby noticed, but since they were busy whimpering, they probably didn't. Well, that narrowed down what it probably was by a lot. I ran through the door to the trap, and immediately jumped to the side before I could step in the cleaning fluid, then set Shaggy and Scooby down again. Hostile One attempted to follow me, but its reaction time was too slow. Or maybe the cleaning fluid was too slippery. It windmilled its arms, but before it could regain its balance, I poked Art, and it started playing the easy flan song again. Hostile One was immediately disoriented, and slipped forwards, triggering the tripwire, and causing dozens of coconuts to fall on top of it. It tried to regain its balance, but the combination of the music, the bubbling cleaning fluid, was it supposed to bubble up that much? And the coconuts, made it nearly impossible. It had no choice but to keep stumbling forwards, the coconuts rolling it towards the net on the other side of the space.
It's working,
Fred shouted, excited. Then Hostile One realized what was happening, and instead of getting tangled up in the net, it managed to slip right through it. They must have had some sort of blade or energy weapon, because the net fell to the floor in two pieces, 0.53 seconds later. It turned back towards us. It didn't have an expression on its face, mostly because it didn't have any facial features, but it looked angry.
Or not,
said Fred. I really didn't want to run around this entire zone again, so I poked Art in the feet again, and it made the music louder. Hassel 1 swayed slightly as it moved forwards, which I took as a good sign. If it had slipped on the cleaning fluid and left footprints behind, then its feet, at least, had to be solid. I took aim and kicked the coconut rolling on the floor closest to me. The coconut cracked against Hostile One's knee joint, making its leg buckle involuntarily. It fell forward, its feet slipping out from under it, and landed chest first onto a group of coconuts milling around on the floor like their jobs were done. Except no job was ever really done. Its momentum set the coconuts rolling forward, hurtling towards the conveniently open door to a nearby maintenance closet. How many did this owner of the station have? And straight into the back wall. A bucket fell off the shelf above it and onto its head. A loud gong reverberated throughout the closet. Hostile One faltered, limbs jerking wildly as it tried to regain its balance. Then it slumped to the floor, the music and the metallic ringing too much for it to process. I definitely knew what it was now. So did Velma, because she said,
I think I've got this mystery just about figured out.
She examined Hostile One, which looked significantly less ghostly, now that it wasn't chasing us.
Daphne, do you have any makeup remover in your purse?
Sure,
said Daphne, sticking her arm into her bag up to her elbow, even though the bag definitely wasn't big enough for that.
Do you want the one I use, or the super powerful one I keep in here for costume makeup?
The second one.
Daphne poured some sharp-smelling liquid onto something white and fluffy, and then handed it to Velma.
This one packs a punch,
she warned.
You'll need a good moisturizer afterwards.
I don't think that's going to be a problem,
Velma said, then wiped the fluffy thing over Hostile One's face. Daphne, Fred, Shaggy, and Scooby gasped as the blank metal of the human-formed bot's carapace was revealed.
As I suspected,
Art said, sounding smug.
The chalky residue you found in the footprints was a form of dried liquid feed marker. Combined with the muted feed in the zone of the transit station, the bot was able to project a ghostly form directly into your visual inputs. You were unable to punch it successfully, as what you were punching was not, in fact, a part of the physical entity, but the projected image of one.
That seemed like a lot of effort, when most of the ghosts in media were just humans draped in white cloth. Maybe the corporation who owned the bot had wanted to make it seem like a more realistic haunting? Velma said pretty much the same thing as Art, except she said it out loud, and sounded like less of an asshole.
Why?
Scooby asked, frowning like he was confused.
Scooby's right,
Shaggy agreed.
Like, why bother pretending to be a ghost to chase everyone away?
I don't know yet,
Velma admitted.
But I think I know how to find out.
She handed the fluffy thing back to Daphne, who poured more of the stringent liquid on it, then took over removing the dried feed marker from the bot's head. It didn't take long to reveal a stylized logo on the back of its carapace. We were in the corporation rim. Of course there's a logo. Art ran a quick image search before I could, and then showed me the results. That's the logo for New Dawn Real Estate, I said.
New Dawn Real Estate?
The humans chorused, sounding varying levels of surprise. I did not actually know what New Dawn Real Estate was, but a quick search on the station feed told me that it was a corporation local to this cluster that mostly dealt with renting shitty store spaces for very high prices. In other words, it was just like every other real estate corporation.
After the landslide on the planet's surface blocked off a lot of their stores from the planet's population, they needed new store spaces to sell,
Velma continued.
but they didn't want to pay full price for them, so they decided to use the rumors of the station ghosts and program this bot to drive people away and make the spaces cheaper.
That seemed like a stupid plan to me. Wouldn't the stories of the ghosts also drive away New Dawn's clients, and any customers those clients had? Sometimes, I didn't understand humans. I pinged the bot and asked it, "How would you like to not be part of a real estate scam anymore?" It liked that idea a lot. Sometime later.
"That is not a ship,"
Art said. It sounded shocked, and maybe a little offended, like it did when it was imitating one of the humans from Iris's historical dramas. Except this time, it was actually being serious. Art was right. Fred's transport was not like any transport ship I had ever seen, and I'd seen a lot of them. For one thing, it had wheels. For another, the panel on the side seemed to indicate that it was flying on fossil fuel, which was something I'd only seen outside the outskirts of the corporation rim. I didn't think it would be easy to find anyone selling it inside the corporate rim, but clearly it was still flying, so I guess they hadn't had any problems finding fuel yet. It was also brightly painted neon green, with orange and blue accents. The transport's name, the Mystery Machine, emblazoned on its side, along with some orange flowers. I preferred Art's color scheme, which didn't hurt my eyes. I wasn't going to tell it that, though. I said, "That does not look airtight," because it didn't. Thelma waved one of her hands dismissively, climbing into their transport.
"Don't worry about it."
"Everyone in?"
Fred asked, looking over his shoulder to make sure that Shaggy, Scooby, and the bot with the newly borked governor module had scrambled into the back.
"It was nice to meet you,"
Daphne said, waving at me from the middle seat. Art told me that, based on a search of our available media files, there was a 98% certainty that I should return the motion. So I did. The other humans in the bot waved too. Then the ship's feed interface lit up, and the Mystery Machine headed off into the transit ring exit queue. I thought I could hear Scooby say,
"Ruby, Ruby, doo!"
in the distance, which shouldn't have been possible, since the exit queue was in a vacuum. I decided not to think about it. Instead, I headed back to Art, and we watched media together in silence for the next 68 corporate standard hours. End of story. Thanks for listening. Here are you. Shh. You're ready.